When it comes to the lean executive recruiting landscape, staying ahead means staying informed. Subscribing to the Stiles Associates email list gives you access to the latest compensation data, industry analysis, and career resources straight from their recruiting team. Plus, you'll receive hand-picked career opportunities from leading companies, whether you're seeking new challenges or just curious about the market. So head over to leanexecs.com and sign up to get on the Stiles Associates email list and transform the way you make strategic decisions for your company and your career. Thanks for listening. Did you know I can help your organization on this journey of cultivating a culture of learning and innovation? I can be a trainer, coach, and advisor on topics including psychological safety, problem solving, and continuous improvement. I can add value to your management team meetings by speaking and facilitating discussions on these important topics. To learn more, visit markgraben.com or email me, mark@markgraben.com. Let's improve together.
Welcome to the Lean Blog Podcast. Visit our website at www.leanblog.org. Now, here's your host, Mark Graben.
Hi, this is Mark Graben. Welcome to episode 239 of the podcast for January 18th, 2016. My guest today is Pascal Dennis, and I'm really honestly quite surprised he's only been a guest once before. I thought it had been more than that. If you go back to episode 96, we were talking about one of his previous books, The Remedy, and you can find that episode by going to leanblog.org/96. Today, we're going to be talking about his excellent book, Lean Production Simplified. It is now out in a third edition from Productivity Press, which is the same publisher as my books. His new edition has more examples from healthcare. Pascal and I have been able to do some work together in that realm. Pascal is head of a consulting group called Lean Pathways, and I really recommend Pascal and his work highly. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Here is Pascal. Thanks for being a guest again on the podcast.
Thanks, Mark. It's always a pleasure. Looking forward to a good discussion.
Yeah, likewise. So we're here today primarily, well, I think we'll go into other topics, but we're going to talk about your new book, Lean Production Simplified, or it's a new third edition. I've been, you know, it's been a favorite book of mine going back to the original edition. You know, your background, of course, is at Toyota, and you know, I think the book is just very, very clear and a well-grounded you know, summary of what Lean is. So maybe first, you know, for people who might not be familiar with you, I should ask first, maybe, you know, talk a little bit about some of your background and experience, and then, you know, talk about the third edition of the book, if you would.
Yeah, I'm happy to. Like you, I'm a professional engineer, and I studied chemical engineering, and you know, my initial work was in health, safety, and environmental engineering, and I joined Toyota Motor Manufacturing in that capacity, and I grew up there professionally, and was lucky to have you know, very patient and good-humored senseis that that taught me and my colleagues the basics. About 16 years ago, I launched a coaching a team called Lean Pathways, and we've been lucky enough to work in a range of industries, the beginning with manufacturing and then branching out into consumer goods and aerospace. And nowadays, we do a lot of coaching in areas like healthcare, especially information technology, design, more work upstream and downstream of operations, if you will. So it's been a marvelous journey, a heck of a lot of fun, and I've learned a ton. But as the old adage goes, the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. So I'm humbled now more than I've ever been, I suppose.
Yeah, and so along the ways, you've had different experiences and worked with different people and learned different things. What are some of the main changes for the third edition here?
Well, as I said, as you and I have discussed a number of times, lean thinking and methods are developing roots now, far beyond manufacturing. They're moving upstream and downstream of operations, for example, and into sales and marketing, engineering design downstream into a supply chain, retail, customer service, and they're also moving laterally into totally different industries like healthcare, and as I said, information technology. And the first edition and the second edition were largely focused on manufacturing, the heartland, if you will, of lean. But increasingly, as I work with people and my team works with people, it's clear that we need to translate Deming called the profound system of knowledge for our friends and colleagues in these other areas. So the book has many more examples from outside of the factory. So, for example, what does quality in the process or Jidoka mean in a healthcare value stream? What does standardized work mean for a design team or for a surgical team? So trying to shine a light on questions like that and help our colleagues in different industries thereby.
Yeah, because, lean production, I guess, people originally thought of it as being something for the factories, even within the manufacturing enterprise. But as yep. you're saying, lean becomes useful, or as, hopefully as there's a lean culture, that becomes more than just a factory culture. What are some of the things, I'd like to talk about healthcare and other industries, but what are some of the things that are interesting to you in terms of translating lean from the shop floor to other parts of a manufacturing enterprise or a business?
I guess what's endlessly fascinating for me is the following kinds of questions. How do core mental models change as you move upstream and downstream of operations? How does the basic definition of value change? As our colleagues listening will attest, lean begins by defining value. But what is value for, say, an HR team or a marketing team? How do people think? What are their core mental models and assumptions about reality in these new areas? How do they translate value? And then everything else opens up. So if we know what value is, how do we understand what waste is? How do we triage waste? And how do we apply the fundamentals, visual management, standard work, daily accountability, so that we can achieve that value? And it's really endlessly fascinating because there are no simple answers, as you know.
So in an area like HR, we talk about value, and value is defined by the customer. I'm sure it gets complicated or confusing. HR is not working with the customers. I guess customers aren't willing to pay a surcharge for recruiting and hiring talent who then add value. Do you view it or try to translate it and think about HR's internal customers? Or how would you talk through this idea of value with somebody who works in sort of an internal function like that?
Yeah, that's a terrific question. Staying with HR, we ask, what is value for you all? And so HR needs to ask its internal customers, to your point, what do you need from us? How can we help you? And also, that's one vector. It's kind of like in physics, it's the sum of vector forces. That's one important vector, the internal customer. The second vector is provided by senior management and their definition of purpose. What are we trying to achieve as an organization? So the HR team needs to reflect and process those two vectors and turn that reflection into a handful of critical few metrics and a simple statement of value. So, for example, one answer could be, and this is the answer we came up with at Toyota Motor Manufacturing Canada in Cambridge. Value for us in HR is to hire, develop, and motivate smart, flexible people who are always looking for a better way. And we were able to translate that simple statement of value and purpose into a handful of core metrics and put them up on our daily team board and invite our customers, in a car plant that would be paint, plastics, assembly, the engine plant, and on a regular basis check, you know, daily accountability and ask them, how are we doing? You know, how are we doing in terms of these key metrics? It's not an easy process, and all the fundamentals apply. You got to go see. You have to develop strong binary, in other words, okay, not okay metrics and connections with your customers. You got to be naked in a sense. You got to stand up in, you know, these areas and ask, how are we doing? Have a target and an actual, and make the reds really clear, just like our colleagues would do in final line assembly. You know, at the end of the day, at the money board, we stood there as a management team, and final line would tell all its internal customers what the hot spots were, where they met the target, where they didn't, and the suppliers were supposed to come back with answers. So the basics apply, but require finesse. Encourage, I think, and to achieve what I just described, you have to understand your mental models and deepen and extend them. Go see and take some risks and have, you know, some people call it critical conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, you talk about mindsets and mental models. I think that's one thing you've articulated really clearly. And you know, I would invite people go to Pascal's website, and there's a series of cards that describe, you know, sort of, you know, traditional mental models and lean mental models, and I think those go to show how lean is not about how do we build cars better, but it really is, you know, a different way of thinking, a different way of managing and leading, you know, a different type of organization. Is there one of those, you know, comparisons of those mental models that stands out to you as being, you know, maybe let's talk about healthcare a little bit. You know, one of those that's most interesting to talk through with people in healthcare, the before and after type comparison.
Boy, that's a very juicy question, Mark. I spend most of my personal practice, I think, is coaching senior executives and working through questions just like that. So, some of the mental models that are relevant and require deep reflection are, I guess the first one is in healthcare, senior leaders with the best of intentions tend to view improvement as a result of them. You know, improvement happens when people just like me come up with fiendish plans and everybody else does as they're told. You know, and you've seen it.
Yeah.
And it's not ill will.
No.
And these are not bad people, but that's just the way they were taught in medical school or whatever practice they came out of. So shifting from that image to improvement occurs when we define purpose in a clear and compelling way, identify what's preventing us from achieving purpose, develop one-page plans for eliminating those obstacles, and then most important of all, involving everybody in the organization in fixing their requisite part of that overall elephant, if you will, we call purpose. And that's just a fundamentally different way of thinking, you know. And again, it's not ill will, it's not lack of capability, but it takes humility. One of the core themes in, you know, in Lean Simplified and all my books, I think, is the need for the personal change and personal growth, you know? Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think maybe we can delve into, I was going to ask you when you mentioned a daily accountability process and some of the old habits, maybe not just in healthcare, but, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times, you know, people use the word accountability. We need more accountability. We need people to be accountable. We need to hold people accountable. I try to ask, well, what, tell me more about that. What do you mean? Because, like, you know, to me that word has a lot of potential meanings. Some of the old habits in healthcare, like you said, this is just, you know, the way people have been taught. Accountability means, as they say in healthcare, naming, blaming, and shaming. It's very much kind of focused on, you know, punishment as opposed to, you know, I think the question you brought up, having a discussion around what's preventing us from accomplishing our goals, what's preventing us from eliminating harm. So I'd be curious for you to, you know, maybe kind of talk through how you would describe accountability or a daily accountability process in a lean context.
I'm happy to. Another really good question. And as you were speaking, I thought it's so tricky because words have different meanings to you and I, for example, than they might have to someone who was trained in as a surgeon or something. So for me, accountability and daily accountability means each unit in the hospital, in the factory, in the design team has a daily stand-up meeting wherein we look at target versus actual of with respect to our end-of-pipe targets, so it could be throughput, for example, or cost, as well as process targets. So if it's a design process, how are we doing at phase 1, 2, 3? And so A, how are we doing? B, what are our biggest problems? C, what are our current countermeasures? And are the plans on track? Those kinds of questions. And underlying that is the understanding that we have really good people. And our people are not the problem. The problem is almost always in the process. So there's a good humor, there's a humanity, and there's, I call it a light touch, as we had at Toyota. Whereas for other folks that grew up in a different mindset, for them accountability means just what you said. Who's responsible and how will we punish them? So that's where that one-on-one coaching, and I know you do a lot of coaching yourself, but that's where that one-on-one coaching is so vital, because a senior leader needs to be vulnerable and open, but they can't do that given their position in a broad, in a big public context. There needs to be one-on-one time to water drop those key lessons. And at some point, they have that eureka, and then everything opens up. But without that kind of discussion, these simple words have very different meanings. And, just a very quick story. This was chief operating officer, very capable, good person. And as we started our coaching work together, she emphasized accountability. We got to have accountability. And I said, well, how are you going to do that? Well, it's your show. That's what I tell our front line. It's your show. You figure it out. It's your show. And then I talked to the front line, and I said, well, so-and-so says, it's your show, and thereby, you're totally involved and empowered. And they said, no, we're not empowered. And accountability is shame and blame. Basically, we're abandoned. We've been abandoned here, working in this awful system, lack of processes, and my span of control is 50. I remember a nursing manager telling me that. So you can see the kind of icky situations that can arise,
So, habits like that are tough to, or, it's difficult to break some of those habits. I was, in episode 236 was a conversation with John Toussaint, and he was talking about, and he's been in their shoes as a former hospital CEO, but he was saying, part of the challenge he sees is that a lot of the hospital CEOs don't know what they don't know. They don't know what the problem is, or it can be difficult, or perhaps, as you say, with a light touch. How do you help people see where, habitual behaviors can be counterproductive, or if they have an incorrect view? Their mental model of the organization, as you said, is, oh, my people are empowered. They should go and fix things. And if they don't, shame on them. That might not really be accurate. I mean, how, do you have any tips for people who are trying to have some of these discussions with executives? You can't be as blunt, I don't think, as to say, hey, you're wrong, buddy. Maybe you can. I don't know.
I wish it was that easy. Occasionally, I call it showing the sword. I come out of a Japanese and martial arts tradition, so I think of things in terms of swords. So occasionally you show the sword and say, look, buddy. but in private and respectfully. So that's such a critical point. How do senior leaders or any person, how does any person change their thinking? It has to be through practical experience. So, and repetition. So I call it drip, 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 drip. So in my coaching, we have lots of go see, lots of repetition in different forms. So it's slightly different, slightly fresh repetition in terms of also visiting other workplaces, talking with peers that have been through the journey. A lot of reading. These are very smart people, so I regularly will highlight, look, there's a piece in HBR about how the brain is structured and what it means with respect to visual management. Here's another piece from so-and-so about this or that. And over time, and you know, the old marketing adage, you got to hear it 17 times. It's probably not far off. Now, having said that, it's also important to develop personal relationship, as you know, and trust, so that the senior leader knows that I can trust this person. You know, Mark has my back, and he's trying to help me become a better leader and help us achieve our goals. So if he's giving me a little bit of tough medicine right now, or, you know, showing me stuff I'm uncomfortable about, I know that at the end of the day, the motivation is noble and I'm getting better, you know. And finally, having practical pilots that generate results, I think that's very important, you know.
Yeah, so maybe I want to come back to some of that discussion around daily accountability and those cycles, because, you know, what you're describing in hospital departments and within teams also cascades at different levels of the organization. I think I've heard you describe this as sort of a fractal process.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how that accountability is modeled at different levels of the organization?
So we have normally the management system I conceive of as having at least three levels. Level one being the front line, the daily team huddle, the daily accountability. Level two is the people that they report to. So in a hospital, it would be, you know, directors and senior managers. And then level three would be senior management. And in each case, the daily, the accountability process looks something like this. Although I should say that the frequency of the check varies as you go up, because the gear gets bigger, the check is less frequent. It's not dissimilar to an NFL football team. Front line would be, you know, the offensive line, defensive line, linebacker coaches, etc. Those are frontline units. So they check every play or maybe after every series, whereas the entire coaching staff, because it's a big group, they probably check at the beginning of the game, at halftime, and at the end of the game. In any event, so in a hospital, let's say we're the blood bank team, we need a daily check, a daily accountability based on that good connection with our customers. So who's the customer? Well, it's clearly OR and ED and others. So what do you need from us, OR? Well, we need this mix of blood plasma, that volume, this turnaround time. We need you to meet national quality and safety standards. Okay, got it. Now let's boil those down into a handful of metrics. And at the beginning of the day or beginning of the shift, let's stand up as a team and see what happened last week. What's going to happen this week? What are the watchouts? What are the biggest problems? You know, what are our improvement focuses based on, you know, True North and senior leaders' definition of purpose? So every day we do that, and we stand up and say we're okay, we're not okay. Here's a, you know, what's the problem? What are the top problems? What's the countermeasure? What's the status of the countermeasure plan? And you ideally over time you invite your customers. So you say to OR, you know, or emergency department, well, please feel free, you know, to join us on Fridays. We invite our internal customers and let us know how you're doing. Similar process at level two and level three, with a number of subtleties in there. So level two, for example, usually we check less frequently because we're looking more at flow problems. So let's say we've got a major care line, you know, beginning with ED and through surgical services and ending with discharge. Well, normally, you know, those kinds of value stream Kaizens, you know, entail slower progress, and the metrics change more slowly. So maybe we meet twice a week or something like that. But the same kind of thing. And at senior leadership, again, because we're, you know, like the coaches of, you know, the Dallas Cowboys, it's a big team. We probably won't be checking every play. So we may not be checking every day, but we certainly would be checking once a month or something like that. So you build this system of connected checking and accountability defined per our earlier discussion in it, you know, informed by core mental models. We know we got good people. Mm-hmm. We know that the problem is almost always in the process.
Right.
We know that problems are telling us where the system is broken, so problems are golden, etc. You know, and then you have a chance. You're in the game. It's not easy. Life is very hard, and management's hard, but you're in the game.
Well, it's, you know, what you described there is a very similar thought process, a similar set of questions, and it seems like, you know, that is a good way for senior leaders to learn about lean mindsets instead of thinking, well, you know, all these departments need to change and they all need to start thinking differently. They can go through that same process and then hopefully serve as coaches and mentors to others that are trying to practice that same approach, right?
Yeah, that's such a great insight. And at some point, you know, really good leaders lock in the following lesson. I am doing the same thing that my team is doing. In fact, what I do is replicated 100 times. So, for example, and this one is a very common one in healthcare, if I, as the COO or the chief strategy officer or what have you, continually jump to countermeasures without understanding the problem, everybody's going to do that. So I remember having that discussion with a chief strategy officer at a big, successful, you know, very good hospital, and we were talking about growth, one of their core strategic focuses, and he had a eureka. To his great credit, he said, you know, all these years I've been jumping to countermeasures. My assumption has been growth follows, growth, profitability, etc., follows when we open up more clinics. That's the way you grow, by opening up clinics. And I've never tested that hypothesis. We've never had a pilot. We just do it, and our results are haphazard. There's no evidence that this works. And that just shows his growth and his his intelligence and capability as a person. You know, because people are people. We make these mistakes, but the best people recognize them and they get better. So he's a much better leader now.
Yeah, and that's a powerful example of reflection for someone to have an aha moment, which happens a lot through the study and the practice of lean, being exposed to other leaders who have maybe gone before them in making that transition. I mean, John Toussaint is, shows a lot of humility by, you know, sort of trying to tell other healthcare executives, hey, I didn't always magically think this way. I used to be, you know, what he calls a white coat leader, which has most of the habits, I think, that are the mental models, that you talk about in traditional organizations. But, you know, he says, you know, he was fortunate to have coaches and mentors and people who taught him or kicked him in the butt or what have you. The plant manager, one of the two plant managers I worked for at General Motors 20 years ago, was also a very traditional style of manager, and I got to talk to him a couple of years ago, kind of asking him to reflect, and he said, well, you know, he was fortunate to have experience at NUMMI. You know, he was one of the first GM people to be sent to NUMMI, who learned, you know, the Toyota style and approach, and he went through a transformation, in his own approach. And I think, you know, one thing he taught me, which I didn't see at the time, was the need to be patient with the other leaders there at GM, because I sort of asked him, like, Larry, you really tolerated a lot of bad behavior from the leaders who reported to you, it seemed. Like, you know, we had a plant manager who got it, if you will, and we still had, assistant plant managers running around yelling and screaming and spitting and swearing and stomping their feet. And he said, well, you have to realize that those leaders didn't have the benefit of the experience that he had, and that it, you know, fair enough, you know, he wasn't going to replace everybody overnight, nor were they going to transform immediately.
That's such a great story, Mark. It brings to mind one of my reflections, the past 20 years, and that is a transformation is hard, transformation hurts, and we partially succeed. Mm-hmm. You know, Larry reflects that we partially succeed. That's a very humane response. Because he could have just, as you said, yelled and screamed and fired people. And my guess is that his people will get better because they're in a humane environment. And, we partially succeed at. Nobody is perfect at this, including Toyota. It's the nature of transformation. It's hard.
Yeah. And, Yeah, I mean, it's difficult, and you know, we try to be aware of bad habits. You know, I sometimes notice my own brain going in the direction of blaming an individual for something, and you know, you try to catch yourself and say, "Well, wait a minute." You know, it's a very human habit to jump to conclusions, to jump to blame, and you know, we can be more mindful of it, right?
Yeah, me too. It's it's a daily meditation. I find it hard, yeah. Like everybody, you know.
So, well, let's talk a little bit more specifically about the book. Again, it's Lean Production Simplified, the new third edition. Who would you say the book is written for? It, you know, what people and what types of roles? You know, who do you think the readers should or would be ideally?
Well, it's written for you know, leaders at all levels, you know, frontline, middle level leaders, senior leaders. One of the additions is study questions at the end of each chapter. So my image is that, you know, a team leader in any industry might, you know, take their team members through a chapter, and then they have a study group. It's meant to be a practical daily reference. You know, I like to see copies of it, you know, on the desk of the lab technician, or you know, the maintenance tech, or in somebody's cubicle in the IT or engineering department. And I like to see it with scribbles and, you know, notes in the margins and so on. So it's written as a practical guide for regular people, you know, to pull on whenever they need.
And there's, you know, it's always interesting to see when you see a book on a desk, and you know, it's always good to see a copy that looks well read. And you know, think of what happens with that book. You know, do you have recommendations of, you know, how people use a book like yours within the workplace? You know, hopefully beyond just their own personal learning, but do you have advice for, you know, how people can translate that into action in the organization?
I thought a lot about that. You know, how do people use this? How to make this book or any book as helpful as possible? Some of the things that I found to be helpful, and it's kind of nerdy, but it works, like a book club, you know? Mm-hmm. We have a book club, and we read a chapter a week, and maybe have lunch together or spend an hour in some afternoon, and we talk about the questions at the end of the chapter. Another common use is what I call lunch and learns. So I'm a team leader in, you know, a laboratory in a hospital, and part of my goal this year is to engage our team and to level up their knowledge of the fundamentals. So we'll do a lunch and learn on chapter 4, you know, quality in the process. And part of the lunch and learn is a short lesson, and then we go out and take a walk, different parts of our lab, and we identify, you know, what kind of embedded tests do we currently have in our process, what are the biggest risks with respect to satisfying our customers. So, for example, labeling is a big one. Okay, mislabeling has potentially catastrophic consequences. Let's all take a walk and assess the robustness of our current process based on what we've just learned. So activities like that make the concept, whether it's quality in the process or standard work, real. And people like reporting out. And next step after that is to introduce some basic improvement methodology, like quick and easy Kaizen. And you can use chapters as a theme. So this month's theme is quality in the process. Let's see if we can come up with as many ideas as we can in our lab to strengthen our processes, so improve the labeling, improve the, you know, our high runner processes, improve lead time, or whatever our customers are telling us we need. So in that way, it becomes a real thing. And, you know, as you know, lean methods are a lot of fun. You know, you get away from your normal work. Here I'm processing urine samples or, you know, biopsies, and I get an hour, and I zoom out, and I look at the entire lab, and I say, hey, you know, why have we got this layout here? You know, quality in the process means safety as well. So all these islands here, and you know, this crazy spaghetti that we have to walk means that it's more likely I'm going to drop the sample, or I'm going to contaminate it, and it's toxic chemicals and, you know, infectious agents. Why don't we you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so yeah, that talk and that discussion about the concepts hopefully leads into identifying some things we can fix. What can we make better?
Yeah, exactly right. And again, the underlying message is we got a good team. I have faith in you. I'm really interested in what you all are going to come up with. Oh, boy, you know. And, you know, senior leaders can supplement that with good internal rounding practices. And, you know, in the book I described Kamishibai, you know, this visual signboard that allows you as a leader to structure your month, you know. So, you know, Mr. Watanabe at Toyota Cambridge during major launches, he had an internal algorithm informed by his Kamishibai. Mondays he was checking stamping, Tuesdays welding, Wednesdays paint, Thursdays plastics, Friday assembly. And within that there was an algorithm. So four Mondays in January I'm going to check zone ABCD in the stamping plant, and I'm going to have different themes. You know, it's early in the launch, so standardized work is fundamental, so I'm going to use my standard work Kamishibai card, that kind of stuff, you know. Yeah. And so then the message to the team is, holy cow, the boss was here, you know, and she said da 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 da, and she commended us on our improvements in cycle time and labeling, and she gave us some real good challenges. And it's just a different feeling. You know, people feel like, wow, this is great. And their lives are happier, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that whole process of, as I said, you know, accountability from a positive standpoint. What are the barriers? You're trying to do good work. How can I help you? We're going to accomplish this together. Is a very different mindset than, you know, again, I'm having my flashbacks to GM. You know, we didn't hit the goal, so we're going to yell and scream and spit and swear and lecture people for not having enough sense of urgency, which, well, that was not really the bottleneck. That was not the problem.
It's funny when you think of it. You know?
Well, it is in a way, but but you know, thank you for sharing you know, those stories and perspectives, not just in the book, but in our discussion here today. And the other thing I was going to ask you here before we wrap up, third edition is available now. Can you give a bit of a preview of a teaser of a new book that's going to be available here sometime in 2016?
I just finished the third installment in the adventures of Tom Pappas and Andy Saito. It's called Andy and Me and the Hospital. If you're familiar with Andy and Me, Tom is a plant manager with problems, and Andy is his Japanese sensei. And in the latest adventure, they're pulled into a major New York hospital that has real problems, and all hell breaks loose. And the boys figure it out, and hopefully people will like it. I certainly very much enjoyed reading it, and it's written for all our friends and colleagues that are, you know, fighting the good fight in healthcare and against, you know, challenges, not ill will, but certainly unhelpful mental models. And I hope they like it, and hope that it's helpful.
Yeah, and the story, it's written in a novel format, which brings those stories to life in a different way, right?
Exactly right. And one of the underlying themes is that a personal change is fundamental to an organizational transformation. So I try to show, you know, from the perspective of different people in the hospital and from Tom and Andy, the senseis, what sort of change is required, not only, you know, senior leaders, but also in the senseis. I mean, Tom and Andy have to change their thinking. They have to grow as well, you know, to help this hospital achieve success in the face of very difficult problems. So it's not just the leaders. You know, the sensei has to be alive and changing it, growing and challenging themselves too, which is very tough.
It is, but I'll very much look forward to that book being available mid 2016, or it's hard to give an exact date with publishing.
Yes, so we were talking about the value stream and publishing earlier. Hopefully spring, that's the target. Hopefully April, but we'll work with our colleagues and get it out ASAP.
Okay, and I imagine people could probably just jump in and read that book, or they I guess while they're waiting for this one, they could read the original Andy and Me, and then The Remedy was the second book in that series, correct?
Yeah, that certainly would prime them, and I think it would be helpful for all folks. And hopefully it's an easy, fun read. Mm-hmm. You know, it's based on real people that I've worked with for years. It's fiction, of course, but the situations are not. So yeah, by all means, folks, Andy and Me and The Remedy are the precursors to Andy and Me in the Hospital, but feel free.
Okay, well, great. And I certainly hope people will look up those books. People can look on Amazon. Pascal has a very good summary page with a list of all of his books and videos and his bio. What are some other ways that people can find you online, Pascal?
Well, you know, we encourage people to check out blogs. I always say check out the Lean blog. Don't miss one. And you know, we also have a blog at Lean Pathways. Mm-hmm. So leansystems.org blog. We try to keep people engaged that by mm-hmm. thereby. And, you know, there's a LinkedIn Lean Pathways executive forum. Please feel free to join. A lot of really good people and great discussions. And, of course, the Amazon page and tons of YouTube videos. You know, we got a very good social media team. So, so feel free again, folks.
Yeah. Well, thank you again. Our guest has been Pascal Dennis. Pascal, it's really been a pleasure talking to you and catching up and hearing some of your thoughts. So thanks again for being a guest.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful Christmas. Folks, have a great, happy holiday, and here's to a prosperous 2016.
Great, and same to you and to yours. Thanks, Pascal.
Thanks. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Lean Blog Podcast. For Lean news and commentary updated daily, visit www.leanblog.org. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, email Mark at leanpodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, podcast listeners. I'm excited to announce the release of the audiobook version of my new book, The Mistakes That Make Us, Cultivating a Culture of Learning and Innovation. Listen and dive into powerful insights on fostering growth through mistakes. Whether you're a leader, entrepreneur, or just trying to get better at learning from mistakes, this audiobook is for you. Get it now on Audible, Amazon, and Apple Books. Visit mistakesbook.com for more info.